It's good to be together. We've done a little detour the last 3 weeks talking about the believer's battle against sin. I tried to make the central issue in that little detour just what difference does Jesus make in the believer's battle against sin? Does Jesus, in fact, not help much with the battle, but he is there to grant forgiveness when we fail? Thank God for that. Is that the right picture, that he doesn't actually give much help with the battle? Those who are believers, in fact, don't have many more resources to fight the battle than anybody else has, but they do have Jesus to forgive when we fail. And of course, Jesus is the means of forgiveness of sins. But I don't think he's just that. He's also the means by which those who believe in him die to sin. If Jesus is in the picture, the believer can be crucified with him. So we just lingered on that a little bit. And I think if we approach the battle against sin as if we are still alive to sin, that we miss the difference that Christ makes. Because in Christ, you've been crucified with him and you have died to sin. And to approach the battle that way by faith is letting the difference that Jesus makes into the picture. So we did that little detour. My kids and Jan said something to me, you should throw in there a commercial for your book when it comes out. If you need more on what we just talked about, get my book when it comes out. Some of the issues in the book deal with those kinds of things. So there's a commercial for the book, or incentive to work on it. But we've been in a series on the Gospel of Matthew. And our focus has been on the things that Jesus says. Just the words that Jesus speaks during his earthly ministry. And we have, in fact, looked at most of the passages in the Gospel of Matthew where Jesus talks at length. The only kind of long talking that Jesus does in Matthew that we have not yet considered are the things that he says in the temple during the last week of his life on earth. He makes that triumphal entry, Palm Sunday, and then he spends like a week in Jerusalem, and he's in the temple some of the time, and he talks while he's in the temple. He teaches. And basically, Matthew 23 to 25, those three chapters, are things that Jesus says after his arrival in Jerusalem. And we haven't considered that yet. But we're just a couple of weeks away from the celebration of Easter, so I want to skip ahead just a little bit. We're going to come back to those things that Jesus says in chapters 23 to 25, those things that he says in Jerusalem. But Matthew 26 begins the narrative of the last few days before Jesus' arrest, trial, and crucifixion. Matthew 26 begins this way. This is how Matthew 26 begins. When Jesus had finished all these words, he said to his disciples, "You know that after 2 days, the Passover is coming, and the Son of Man is to be handed over for crucifixion." So Matthew 26 marks the end to Jesus talking in the temple. Does that, when Jesus had finished all those words, meaning the things he'd just been saying in the temple. But it's also a little bit bigger. This start of in Matthew 26 marks the end of Jesus' public ministry, begun way back at his baptism. And Jesus says here, you know, all the talking that he wants to do in his public ministry from his baptism until now, it's all done. There's not a lot more to be said by him. He's said all that he's wanted to say, that he has to say. And all that's left now is some very great happenings. All that's left is in a couple of days, the greatest happenings of all time are going to unfold. But just before the commencement of those happenings, those greatest happenings of all time, it's as if Matthew gives us some snapshots of where people are at. After all of the words, when Jesus had finished all these words, And now it's 2 days away, the beginnings of these very great happenings, the greatest happenings ever. Matthew, like, gives us snapshots. Where are people? What are they thinking? What's going on with them after all this talking by Jesus, after all the things that he has said? There's actually a bunch of scenes in Matthew 26. It's a long chapter, 75 verses. So there's quite a few different scenes. But I think we can look at the chapter as all of Jesus' words. Where does it leave all these people that have heard the words of Jesus? You know, there are scenes when the words are finished and just before these great happenings take place. Jesus' public ministry lasted probably 3.5 years. It could have been as short as 2.5 years, but probably it was around 3.5 years long. So Jesus has been talking and ministering to people for 3.5 years. That's about as long as Life Christian Fellowship has been meeting, by the way. So think of all the talking that we've done, if you've been here from the start until now. That's how long Jesus has been around talking and ministering, for 3.5 years. So where are people at when Jesus is finished with all the words? And Matthew 26 gives us a scene of where people are at. And there's more in the chapter than we can do today, but I'm just going to pick 5 scenes in the first part of the chapter to reveal where people are at after hearing all the things that Jesus has said for 3.5 years. The first scene is going to be of the priest, the chief priest, and the elders. These are perhaps the folks who should be most interested in Jesus' words. Priests are people who are appointed on behalf of men and things pertaining to God, right out of the book of Hebrews. So priests should be very interested in what the Word of God made flesh would have to say, because they're appointed on people's behalf and things pertaining to God. And of course, the leaders are leaders of the chosen covenant people of God, the elders. So of all the people on the planet who should be very interested in what Jesus has to say, it should be the chief priest and the elders of Israel. Yet after all of the words, 3.5 years of words, here is where the chief priest and the elders are. So Jesus has finished all the words. Then the chief priest and the elders of the people were gathered together in the court of the high priest named Caiaphas. And they plotted together to seize Jesus by stealth and kill him. But they were saying, not during the festival, otherwise a riot might occur among the people. I think if you had inquired before Jesus said one word, before any of his words, if you had inquired, where are the chief priests, where are the elders, you might have said about them, well, I think the chief priests and the elders, I think they're missing the most important stuff. And I think they're worrying way too much about what people think. And they're worrying too much about how people see them. They're doing things to be seen by people. Then come all of Jesus' words. Words about who is blessed. Words about the kingdom of heaven. Parables about the kingdom of heaven. Words about service. And serving God and serving his people. Words about true life. Words about abundant life. All of the words of Jesus for 3.5 years come to him. And after all of those words, where are they? Well, after all of those words, they're missing the most important stuff. And they're worrying too much about what people think and how people see them. In other words, after all the words, they are in the same place. And they are doing the same thing that they were before all of the words. They just want to seize Jesus and kill him because they perceive accurately, of course, that he's a threat to their status quo. And they're thinking most about how do we manage the crowd, how do we manage people's response? So I hope that's sobering, that here people who should be very interested in what Jesus has to say. After 3.5 years and all the words are finished, they are in the same place, missing the most important stuff and worrying about the wrong stuff, worrying about what people think, worrying about what the crowd's going to do, worrying if the riot, worrying if my popularity is going to go down. It's very possible. Actually, it seems especially possible for religious people to listen to all the words of Jesus and have nearly everything that Jesus says be words of challenge to how they are and to what they think. Have all the words of Jesus call for transformation of who they are and how they live. Have all the words of Jesus address the very issues that occupy them, so they can listen to all the words of Jesus, and yet when all the words of Jesus are finished, they are still in the same place. They had the same concerns that they had before they listened to Jesus, the same interests, the same perspective. You can be a harsh grump, and you can listen to 3 years of Jesus on tape or podcast, messages on kindness and messages on patience, messages on gentleness. You can listen to them for 3 years, hear everything Jesus has to say on patience and gentleness and kindness and mercy, and still be a harsh grump. I hope that's a sobering thing. I've seen it with many religious people where they've heard words of Jesus for years, and almost everything Jesus says would challenge, transform, address perspectives and issues and habits and things they have in their life, and they're the same after all the words are finished. And it ought to speak to them, but it doesn't. That happened to the chief priests, happened to the elders. So there's the first scene. Here's the second scene. Now, when Jesus was in Bethany, at the home of Simon the leper, a woman came to him with an alabaster vial of very costly perfume, and she poured it on his head as he reclined at the table. But the disciples were indignant when they saw this and said, "Why this waste? For this perfume might have been sold for a high price and the money given to the poor." But Jesus, aware of this, said to them, "Why do you bother the woman? For she has done a good deed to me. For you always have the poor with you, but you do not always have me. For when she poured this perfume on my body, she did it to prepare me for burial. Truly I say to you, wherever the gospel is preached in the whole world, that what this woman has done will also be spoken of in memory of her." So I want you to know, 2 days before the happenings that lead to Jesus' crucifixion, those things are 2 days away, and where is Jesus? He's at the house of Simon the leper. I really like that. In Bethany. I mean, shouldn't Jesus, 2 days, shouldn't he be meeting in Jerusalem with the executive committee? Doesn't Jesus have a better bucket list than Simon the leper? But you find Jesus at Simon the leper's house in Bethany, 2 days away. And while he's at that home, a story unfolds that's going to accompany the gospel wherever it goes. And of course, it's going to go to all the nations of the world. It's going to go to the ends of the earth. And a story unfolds at Simon's house that says wherever the gospel goes, this story is going to go. It's easy to think that important stories would have to unfold in important places. But a very important story unfolds at Simon the leper's house in Bethany. I just really like that. It's pretty cool. And the story which unfolds is a woman comes with an alabaster vial of costly perfume. I think that perhaps only with the wise men, when they come with their gifts, and in this story, do you get what we might call high-end stuff. most of the time Jesus is low end. You know, he's happy with what you get from Target and Walmart. But the wise men and the gold, frankincense, and myrrh, that's high end stuff. But in this story, the alabaster vial, the costly perfume, I mean, it's the best money can buy type of thing. Came from Europe or someplace exotic or something like that. And the woman comes, she breaks the vial and pours out the costly perfume on Jesus. The disciples think it's wasteful. It's just too, T-O-O. It's too much, too costly, too extravagant, too excessive. They just see it as bad stewardship of limited resources. I mean, they think that the wealth distribution could have been handled much more effectively than it's being done. But Jesus defends the woman, says she's done a good thing, that she's anointed his body in preparation for burial. She is, by the way, the only one who gets to anoint Jesus' body. The woman who come on Easter morning to do so, they're too late. They find an empty tomb. So she is the only one who actually gets to anoint Jesus in preparation for his burial. Did she know that she was doing that? We're not told. I suspect she did not know that she was doing that. I think better, she's just been hearing his words. And her response as she hears all of his words is to waste everything on him. So that's what she does. And Jesus says that what she's done, that story will be told of her wherever the gospel goes. I think the obvious implication there is that this response goes with the gospel. When you hear the gospel, when you hear the good news of Jesus, when you hear his words, this type of response goes with it. To waste yourself on Jesus. No gift, no expenditure, no pouring out is too extravagant, too much, too overboard or anything. It's an appropriate response. So you might ask yourself, as you hear all of Jesus' words, what might for you be an alabaster vial with costly perfume in it? You could do other things with it. You can sell it, you know, and you can take the money and buy toys or give it to the poor. You can do it. It's something that's worth other things, you know, it has some worth. But what might it look like for you to break the vial and pour it all out on Jesus, just in response to the words that you've heard him say? So there's the second scene of what this woman does at Simon the leper's house in Bethany. Here's the third scene. It's a scene about Judas. Judas Iscariot. Judas has certainly heard all the words that Jesus has said. He's traveled with Jesus and the disciples. So how does Judas Iscariot respond? Where is he at? So this captures a scene from where's Judas in all of this. Then one of the 12, named Judas Iscariot, went to the chief priest and said, "What are you willing to give me to betray him to you?" And they weighed out 30 pieces of silver to him. From then on, he began looking for a good opportunity to betray Jesus. So after hearing all of the words, 3.5 years, Judas realizes he has a valuable asset. He realizes he has something that might be worth something. And he wants to know, what will you give me for him if I trade him in? For Judas, Jesus was not a treasure to be cherished, but he became a commodity to be sold. I've done that in jest with my kids a few times. You know, if they cost you a lot of money, I've threatened to sell them on eBay. I could have a good education, you know, been through college, that's paid for, no debt, decent car, few capabilities. How much? What could I get for you? If I did that, kind of, you would say to me, Roger, your kids are supposed to be a treasure that you cherish, even if they're costly.
not a commodity that you built up some worth that now you can get something out of them. You can get something for them. But that's how Judas responds to Jesus. He says, there's something valuable here. I can leverage it. What will you give me for him? Note that this is not the actual betrayal. But it isn't, perhaps, the perspective, the response to Jesus' words that leads to betrayal. And yet the perspective and the response is not all that uncommon, I don't think. It's possible to hear all of Jesus' words, all the things he says, and the response becomes, what can I get for him? You know, what can I get for myself from Jesus, using Jesus? Soon it's going to, for Judas, lead to betrayal. Because by betraying him, he can get 30 pieces of silver. And it's a remarkable thing that Judas, after 3.5 years of listening to all the things that Jesus did and being part of his public ministry, would exchange the Word made flesh for 30 pieces of metal. But that's where he's at. That's what he does. So the fourth scene. So disciples during the Passover. It's the Last Supper. So this scene takes place in Matthew 26. Now when evening came, Jesus was reclining at the table with the 12 disciples. And they were eating. As they were eating, he said, "Truly I say to you that one of you will betray me." Being deeply grieved, they each one began to say to him, "Surely not I, Lord." And he answered, "He who dipped his hand with me in the bowl is the one who will betray me. The Son of Man is to go, just as it is written of him. But woe to that man by whom the Son of Man is betrayed. It would have been good for that man if he had not been born." And Judas, who was betraying him, said, "Surely it is not I, Rabbi." Jesus said to him, "You have said it yourself." So Judas is present again in this scene. And it's remarkable that he's willing to just brazenly lie and tries to deceive, you know, the other disciples about what he's planning on doing by asking the question, "Well, it's not me either, is it, Lord?" So Judas is in this scene too, but I want us for a moment to focus on the other 11 disciples. The other 11 disciples are not going to betray Jesus. But when Jesus speaks of how one of them will betray him, all of them are troubled. Says deeply grieved. And each one of them says to Jesus, "Surely it's not I, is it, Lord?" I mean, they're questions to Jesus that admit that they realize there are fearful possibilities. Somehow the disciples know that even after all the words, hearing all the words, being present with Jesus, that a faithful response is not a slam dunk. I think in this, as the other 11 disciples say, "Not I, Lord, is it?" That there's almost a prayer contained in that question to the Lord. It's the prayer is, "Lord, keep me. Keep me lest I dishonor you. Having heard all the things you've said and been there with all the things you've done, keep me, lest I become one who turn against you and don't trust you and dishonor you somehow, that I turn from you." It's almost like the disciples realize, I think accurately, that that's a possibility. I don't know if you've ever seen something really awful that somebody's done, just really, really bad, and you go, "Huh? I wonder if I'll ever do something like that. I don't plan on it." But you almost admit, "I don't know. Maybe I'll do that to my family someday. Just like that guy did. You know, might I do that?" So the disciples, they realize, okay, we've been through a lot. I'm not planning on betraying the Lord, and they in fact don't. But, "Lord, is it I? Keep me. Keep me in that place where I stay faithful, lest, for fear that, I turn against you or dishonor you." Now, I think in here, there's not a distrust of Jesus. There is but an appropriate distrust of myself. It's a take heed lest I fall type of idea that Paul says. It's the same type of idea that's probably in the words, I don't count myself as having yet obtained. So I press on. Lord, keep me so that I don't turn and end up being the one who turns against you and betrays you. So then just one more. After the Last Supper, and just before Gethsemane, before Jesus goes to the garden, we get this scene. Also, just again, Matthew 26. All the scenes, we missed a couple verses, but we've almost taken them in right in sequence, skipping hardly any verses. Jesus says to his disciples, "You will all fall away because of me this night. For it is written, I will strike down the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock shall be scattered. But after I have been raised, I will go ahead of you to Galilee." But Peter said to him, "Even though all may fall away because of you, I will never fall away." Jesus said to him, "Truly I say to you, that this very night before a rooster crows, you will deny me three times." Peter said to him, "Even if I have to die with you, I will not deny you." All the disciples said the same things too. So Jesus tells his disciples, he tells his sheep, he says, he tells his sheep that their shepherd is going to be struck down. And because the shepherd is struck down, the sheep will scatter. All the sheep are going to fall away. Peter jumps in, of course, first. He says, even if the other sheep scatter, not this sheep. This sheep will die if necessary. This sheep is not going to run away. And all the other sheep, they all say the same thing. It's like the sheep are saying, we're going to be good sheep, even if the shepherd goes down. We've heard all of the shepherd's words, and we're going to be tough sheep on our own if needed. And we're not going to run away, even if the shepherd goes down, even if he's struck down. But, of course, they all do run away. And Peter is going to end up doing the three denials before the night is out. I think the lesson there is sheep really do need the shepherd. And it's a mistake to think, well, I'm a sheep. Kind of like, if the shepherd goes down, I'll be okay. We're sheep, we need a shepherd. If our shepherd goes down, we'll all run away. So there's sheep need the shepherd. And it's interesting that Jesus tells them that this is going to happen, but there's not a lot of blame or guilt. He's not a shame on you thing, because he knows they need a shepherd. He just tells them it's going to happen, but hang in there. When I get raised from the dead, I'll meet you in Galilee. Gather the sheep back together, because the shepherd's resurrected from the dead. But glean the simple lesson here that sheep really do need, oh, the shepherd. And don't be foolish and say, I can be a good sheep, I can be a tough sheep even without the shepherd. Because it's not true of you, it's not true of me, it's not true of any of us. So when all of the words are finished, 3 years of the Word made flesh talking, and where do all the words leave the people? All the talking is done. All that's left now is the greatest happenings to ever unfold, about ready to take place, 2 days away. So where do all the words, all the things that Jesus has said, all the things that he's taught, where do they leave people? Know that it's possible to have heard all the words and to be in the same place, unchanged by it all. Still focused on what people think. Still wanting to be seen by people. Still missing the most important things. Diligently tithing dill and mint and cumin and your herbs. Missing out on love and justice and mercy and righteousness. Hear all the words and be unchanged by it. It's possible to hear all the words And what you want to know is, how much can I get for that? How much can I get for him if I'm willing to sell? I'm willing to trade him in. What could I get? It's possible to hear all the words and have it generate in you a prayer, Lord, keep me, lest I be the one who betrays you. You know, I want to hang on to those words, hold me tight, lest I become one who dishonors you and betrays you. I don't want it to be me, Lord, keep me. And you can hear all the words, take them to heart, but know that you're a sheep, and a sheep needs a shepherd. Hearing all the words doesn't make you shepherd-proof or without the need of a shepherd. Know that you can't hold onto the good course on your own. We all need the shepherd. And know, of course, that you can hear the words, and that the words of Jesus can stir in you a response, I'm going to waste everything on him. I'm going to take my alabaster vial. I'm going to take the costly perfume that's in it. I'm going to break the vial, and I'm going to pour the perfume over him. I'm going to anoint him. I'm even willing to do that in Bethany, at the house of Simon the leper. Probably won't get media coverage there. You know, maybe nobody will notice but him. That's okay. You know, I'll take my high-end stuff and waste it on Jesus in Bethany at Simon's house. And I'm not even going to wait till I'm absolutely certain that it's the right thing to do. I'm going to risk it now. Those who came on Easter morning to anoint Jesus' body, they're pretty certain it was the right thing to do. You know, he's dead. He's in the tomb. Okay, he probably needs anointing. But this woman did it. She didn't know. There's lots of risks there to do it now. And so she says, I'm willing to break it now and pour it out. That's my response to all of his words. So different responses. It's an interesting thing that the words of Jesus leave people in different places, so to speak. I mean, we like to think Jesus came and talked for 3.5 years in the San Gabriel Valley. All of us, after 3.5 years, would be on the same page, right? I mean, here's the second person of the Trinity, the Word of God made flesh, talking to us. 3.5 years, we would all be dialed in after 3.5 years of listening to him. But that took place. And after 3.5 years, some were unchanged by it all. They didn't hear anything that changed them, transformed them, redirected them. Don't let that happen to you. Sometimes it's good to say, ask a friend, ask your spouse. If I really heard the words of Jesus, kind of like, what do you think in my life it would address? For most of us, something that Jesus' words would seem to address is not like some dark, hidden secret that's really complicated. Well, if you heard the words of Jesus, the thoughts that you have every 14th Tuesday about your aunt who lives in Australia might be a little different. It's not like that. It's more obvious. You know, if you heard the words of Jesus, you wouldn't be such a grump. You know, and I know that you're a grump after about 15 minutes of conversation. So if you heard, let Jesus' words speak to you, it would address that. Everybody in the room seems to know it except you. Kind of idea, right? So sometimes it's important for us, let it address the things that it's clear that Jesus' words would speak to this. You're worried about what people think. You know, you're trying to please people. Jesus' words will change that. Don't listen for 3.5 years and be unchanged. Let it reach you. But it's possible. If Jesus were here in San Gabriel Valley 3.5 years, some people, same place. They were before. There would be others. Okay, something valuable here. How do I leverage it to increase my take of silver coins? Others would realize, go on, hang on to those words, Lord, keep me, so that I don't, even after 3.5 years, now wander off betray you. And I still need a shepherd to hold me safe, to follow until the journey is complete. And of course, that woman, such words, waste everything there. So different responses. And I encourage you to those, that are good rather than those that miss it. So I hope that this is like a seventh inning stretch. Public ministry is over. All the talking is done. All the words are finished. Now it's just happenings to unfold. So where are you? There's some more scenes actually there. Maybe we'll pick up a few more in Matthew 26 before the actual betrayal and arrest, trial and crucifixion. But let the words generate in you appropriate response. Let's close in prayer.